supported program, theguyjamesshow.com. Thanks for listening, folks, and don't forget you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. Well, if you're a political junkie like I am, you were up till all hours last night watching the coverage of the Michigan primary and the Democratic debate in Las Vegas. I saw all of it, so I can report it to you. And it is very interesting in both cases, both with the Democrats and with the Republicans. The Republican race is, I guess, more interesting just because it's more fluid. I was actually glad Mitt Romney won because, I think he's I think he's very easy to beat. At least I hope I'm right. If I'm wrong, God help us all a year from now. But I mean, this is a guy who changes his positions literally every other time. It's ironic that the Republicans, who were so complaining about John Kerry, could consider voting for a guy like Mitt Romney. If you caught what happened in Michigan, Michigan has one of the highest unemployment, I think the single highest unemployment rate in the country, largely because the car business isn't going where consumers are going. We still have these big gas-guzzling cars. And people understand that in Japan and in Europe, they make better cars. Largely, I should say, because they're more fuel efficient, and they do all the things that American car companies don't want to do. Well, John McCain said in Michigan that he was going to give the Michigan voters some straight talk, which is that basically their jobs were going to go by the wayside, and they would do new technologies. And Mitt Romney jumped on that and said, no, we're going to keep all the jobs exactly as they are. Well, he saw it very simplistically, obviously. There is, in America, manufacturing jobs are going down and service jobs are going up, and trying to protect every manufacturing job in America is a little bit like trying to protect the blacksmith in the era when the cars are coming and, no one's making horseshoes anymore. But what Romney failed to see was that one of the reasons why we're not competitive is precisely because we are working on an oil economy. And so what does Mitt Romney propose? He proposes reducing car fuel efficiency standards, CAFE standards. He actually thinks that cars are right now getting too many miles per gallon. We need more oil guzzling. We need more addiction to foreign oil, right? So Mitt Romney goes and he says, look, I will help you. My father was a car mogul, a CEO. He made millions of dollars, hundreds of millions, I guess, billions in the car industry. That's why I'm so rich. And he did it by making sure that we have huge gas-guzzling cars that contribute to global warming, and at the same time make sure that George Bush has to kiss more Saudi ass than ever before. Well, he didn't quite say it like I said it, but that's what he would do. And so he basically told them, we don't need to raise fuel standards. That's a terrible thing. We need more reliance on foreign oil. But I'll do it. I'll get you out of it. And so Michigan Republicans, that didn't warm up too much, did vote for him over McCain because I guess he was willing to be all things to all people. One of the things I noticed, though, in the Michigan primary is really how few voters came out to vote. At the same time as the Republican primary, there was the Democratic so-called beauty contest. Now, you know what happened here. Michigan decided to break the rules. The rules say in both parties that if you got to have Iowa caucus and then New Hampshire, and then you have to have so many weeks before you get to the next primary. And the Democratic Party had laid it all out nice and clear, right? Get the Midwestern state, Iowa, New England, New Hampshire, then come down to the South for South Carolina, and then the West for Nevada. Actually reverse those last two. But they had it all worked out. And Michigan and Florida jumped the gun and said, hey, we never get to go early. We're going to go. And the Democratic and Republican Party said, no, you're not. Wait in line. And they said, no, we're going to do it. We don't care what you say. Well, the state legislatures have the right to set the dates of the primaries and caucuses. But it's the parties that decide what delegates get to be seated at the convention. So the Democratic Party said, Michigan and Florida, no, you can't do this. And they said, we don't care what you think. We're going to do this. Both of them, I know in Florida, I think Michigan too, have Republican legislatures. So they said, we don't care what you say in the Democratic Party. And the Democratic Party said, well, then fine. We're not counting your delegates. Now, the Republican Party responded in a different way. You may know they're only counting half the delegates. The media rarely reports that part. But one of the reasons why the Republican primary counted and the Democratic Party one didn't is the Republicans punished them, but only by making them lose half their delegates. Maybe that was the proper response, I don't know, from the Democratic Party. The point was, at the same time as you had the Republican Party primary, you had the Democratic primary in Michigan. Now, in respect to the fact that there were no delegates, Barack Obama and John Edwards pulled out. So the only ones left on the ballot in Michigan were Hillary Clinton, Dennis Kucinich, a slot for uncommitted that people could vote for, and Chris Dodd, who's already left the race, and Mike Gravel, who lost to all of the above. He even lost to Chris Dodd, who was out of the race. But basically, Clinton got between 55 and 60% of the vote. Some 40%, almost 40%, voted uncommitted. That would be the Edwards and Obama vote. And then 4% went for Dennis Kucinich, 1% for Dodd. So, you know, Kucinich, this was his chance. In fact, he actually went to Michigan. I don't know if you know this. He was the only Democrat that campaigned in Michigan because the rules were, you know, that their stuff wouldn't be counted. So Kucinich went there and campaigned and did his best. Still, I think it was a pretty convincing victory for her, even though the others weren't on the ballot, even though it was merely a beauty contest vote. She did pretty well. Back to the Republicans. I don't know if you've heard what Mike Huckabee has been saying lately, Reverend Huckabee, the third-place contender in Michigan. When we come back from break, I'll play it for you. But basically, he is saying that we need to follow God's law, that we have to amend the Constitution to meet God's standards. Pretty scary stuff when you think about it. I mean, is it that different from what the Taliban wants? I mean, I guess there are differences in that fundamentalist Islam is different from fundamentalist Christianity. You know, both seem to want women to obey their husbands. I guess fundamentalist Islam makes sure you cover them up, so there are some differences there. Both are, you know, equally horrible to gay people, certainly. But what do you think about a candidate that says he wants to amend the Constitution to meet God's standards? I have to say, I don't see how Mike Huckabee could ever be elected president of the United States. I just don't see it happening. So, I don't know. Perversely, I guess I wish him well. Giuliani, of course, is going on to Florida. One of the things I found most interesting, though, in all of this, is just how much the Republicans, and I've said this a lot, just how much they don't like their candidates. It's very clear as they go from one to the other. With me, whether it's Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama or John Edwards, and sorry, folks, I just don't think Kucinich is going to take the nomination. But whether it's any of the top three, I basically like where they stand. There's some differences, and I'll get to them when we talk about the Las Vegas Democratic Party debate. But they're really, really minor. All of them want to move this country along towards universal health care and are willing to take the step-by-step approach. Listen, I agree. Kucinich would go all the way there. And hopefully, I think that's where they would all go eventually. But they understand that right now, the best they can get is step-by-step. All of them want to end the war in Iraq and want to do so in a responsible way. Basically, Hillary Clinton has said that within 60 days, she'll consult with the Joint Chiefs of Staff and begin withdrawal. Barack Obama's plan and John Edwards' plan are not that different. They both talk about leaving a few around in Kuwait or around the embassies in order to deal with if there's a, you know, in some sort of very specific, narrow, you know, attack or something by a terrorist group. But basically, they are for withdrawing virtually all of our combat troops from the region. And I think they're about the same on that. When I look at issues of, well, really anything, taxes or on, you know, abortion, they're pretty much the same. One way they're the same that I really don't like, I noticed, was with gun control. Did you hear what they said? Did you watch this Democratic debate in Las Vegas? I was surprised and very disappointed with all three of them. When the issue of guns was brought up, the issue, it was a question raised to Hillary Clinton about whether she still believed in registering and licensing all guns in the United States, which is something, by the way, that Al Gore supported in 2000. And he was, he didn't win by enough to avoid the margin of cheating, as we all know, in 2000. Well, a lot of people felt that Gore went too far, arguing people to register the guns. He went too far politically. You look at a state like West Virginia, Bob Kincaid's home state, a state that had consistently voted Democratic year after year. Even in the 1988 election, West Virginia was one of the few states that voted Democratic with Dukakis. I think there were only six in the whole United States, and the other 44 voted for George Herbert Walker Bush. But they say that West Virginia went red, and I'd be curious to know from Bob if he agrees or not, but that it went red despite the fact that West Virginia has a lot of economic problems. It has a lot of people who need the kind of assistance to lower and middle class people that Democrats provide. But it was all about guns. That because Al Gore wanted to register guns, West Virginia turned against the Democratic Party. Of course, West Virginia, like any state, would have been enough to win the election in 2000 without going to the United States Supreme Court. But Hillary was asked that. Clearly she had a past policy of registering guns. And by the way, what is the big deal with licensing and registering guns? I have to register my car. That's right. I have to register my car. And they're making it a little bit easier now. The first time you have to go to the DMV, now I can do it all by internet or by mail. But I do. The government has a registry of my car. My license plate is in a database, and if they're following me and they're seeing me, they can pull me over and know exactly who I am and whether the car was stolen or not. Now, why do they do that? Well, a car is a lethal weapon, I guess. It is. It does kill people, and you have to safely drive it. And frankly, if you've committed a crime, we want to know who you are as we're chasing you all the time. You know, people get hit or someone runs away and someone says, what was the license plate on that car? You give the license plate, you capture the criminal. And yeah, there are privacy issues. I mean, I'm sure some of us don't like the fact that the government can see our license plate and know where we are at any given moment. But we've had car registration for, I don't know, all of my lifetime, probably all the time since cars have been around. We've probably had it for about 100 years. And I don't hear that many people complaining. Well, I got news for the gun owners out there. Guns kill people too. That's right. Guns actually kill people almost as much as cars kill people. Okay, not quite. Cars kill more people, but more people have cars, and cars are used a lot. Look at it this way. If you compare the percentage of times a car is used and it kills people, you know, what, one out of every 1,000 times a car is used? 10,000? 100,000? And you do the same for guns, I assure you that guns kill people at a greater rate. What is so terrible with requiring people to register their guns? Just register them, not with, you know, just with the government, just with the police. The police know if a gun is used in a crime and it would have this nice little registration number on it, just like a VIN number for a car, they can trace the gun back to its owner. Frankly, if the gun was stolen, that helps place the killer. Let's say someone kills someone with a gun or robs a liquor store and drops the gun. They find the gun, or not even drops the gun. You can do ballistic tests on bullets these days to find out from what kind of gun it was shot. So you find out that it came from this place, and then you can trace it. Maybe the person who owns the gun shot it. Maybe it was stolen. It helps in the prevention of crimes. What possible reason could a law-abiding person fear registration? Frankly, I'm more concerned about them registering my car because I don't know that I want the government to know, for example, if I attend a political rally of another party or an anti-war rally. And they can do that just by watching my car. But the gun? If I just want my gun for hunting and fishing and self-defense, why would I be concerned about registering guns? And to my great chagrin, Hillary Clinton backed off that policy and said, you know, I support Second Amendment rights, and talked about some good things, you know, that we can do in terms of tracking down those who are mentally ill and things that are far more than Republicans would do. But she backed off the idea of registering guns. So then it went to Barack Obama, and I was listening to him, and he backed off. And then I thought, well, surely John Edwards will... No, he backed off. And they all said pretty clearly, we can't do this for political reasons. We can't do this because the gun nuts taught us that we can't register guns. And yet my question for the gun nuts is, why the heck not? We do register cars. Maybe one of you can answer this question. Toll-free number is 877-4HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. When we come back, I will play the infamous clip by Mike Huckabee. We'll be right back after this.
This is the Head-On Radio Network.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Here's the guy changing the way you hear music, Billy Shears.
Tune in to Night Sounds every Saturday night, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern. You'll hear the latest in new music releases, special segments like One Hit Wonders, Under the Covers, and Night Sounds dedications with the sassy and classy Erica Richards. For requests and dedications, direct your email to nightsounds@billyshearsmusic.com. So tune in and stop by the chat room this Saturday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head-On Radio Network, The Horn.
Hey. Thanks for lending an ear.
Everyone loves to listen to music, but have you ever stopped to think about why it's great for kids to learn to play music? Hi, I'm Darius Rucker from Hootie the Blowfish. These days it seems people focus way too much on the economics of school music instead of an amazing positive effect it has on kids. It's such a thrill for a child when he or she gets the first instrument or masters a simple part on the flute or performs a showstopper with a school chorus. And there's so much music out there to play and listen to. When kids learn to appreciate a show tune, a Beethoven symphony, or an opera, in addition to what they hear on the radio, it only opens their young minds to the diversity of the world around them. Make sure your kids learn to love music. Support your school music program.
A PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, and the National Anthem Project, the campaign to restore America's voice through music education. March is Music in Our Schools Month.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. So we're talking about both the Michigan primary and also the Las Vegas debate. You should know, of course, the schedule. This Saturday is the Democratic Nevada caucuses. There is a legal question about whether or not people can vote in the casinos. I'm going to talk about more about that in a minute. At the same time, Saturday is the Republican Nevada caucuses as well as the Republican South Carolina primary. Then a week from Saturday would be the Democratic South Carolina primary. February 3rd is Maine for the Republicans. And then February 5th, Super Tuesday, 23 states, probably your state. Amazing. It'll do that. And then for those that are still left standing in my region of the area, in the District of Columbia, Virginia, and Maryland, a week later, we have our own what's being called the Chesapeake primary. But I don't know if you heard the speeches that people gave after. I don't know if any of you even follow the Republican race like I do. You should, though, because you should know who these people are. But Mitt Romney did something very interesting after his, you know, he won the Michigan primary. He invoked the name of Ronald Reagan and George Herbert Walker Bush. Now, I haven't heard the name Herbert mentioned very often in politics. You know, people say George Bush, or they say Bush, or they say George Bush Sr. By saying George Herbert Walker Bush, Mitt Romney was making clear that he's going to follow Reagan, and he's going to follow Bush Daddy, but he ain't going to follow Bush Son. If you ever wanted to know how Republicans really feel about W, all you had to do was hear Mitt Romney's speech, where he invokes Reagan and Bush 1, but not Bush Jr. It was funny, the talking heads were asking Ari Fleischer, the Republican flack, the ex-press secretary for W, what they thought about the fact that Romney said it. And by the way, Romney didn't say it once, he said it twice. He mentioned Reagan and George Herbert Walker Bush, rather than George Walker Bush. And Fleischer said, oh, I'm sure that was just an oversight. So they contacted the Romney campaign, and lo and behold, no oversight. Romney intentionally decided to give to throw our current president on the coals. People really do want change, even Republicans. And I just feel like if we don't win this election, oh my God, it is definitely our election to lose. We got John Fox on the phone, our host from Australia. I don't know what middle of the night it is there, John, but welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Well, I'll tell you, mate, it's kind of early here, and I was just going to make, you know, cup of coffee number two, and I heard you mention this Willard comment on fuel efficiency standards, and I'm telling you, I almost broke my neck just kind of in shock, horror, snapping around going, what?
Romney wants to lower.
What was the justification for this?
Well, because it's bad. What Romney has said is
that
he knows Detroit. He knows what Detroit wants. Of course, Detroit is, you know, where all the big gas-guzzling American cars are made. And these, you know, heavy regulations, things like fuel standards, harm the economy in Michigan. And therefore, I understand Michigan. My father was governor of Michigan for 3 terms, which is true. And therefore, I'm going to be... And his father was a car magnate, too. So he is definitely on the side of the CEOs of car industries. And the CEOs don't want CAFE standards. Yeah.
I think someone needs to wake him up to the statements of the CEO of General Motors just this week. In his opening kind of speech at the big motor show, he stated very clearly that the automotive industry, it is the end of the era of the petrol-driven car.
He stated very clearly.
That the future of the automotive industry is in electric cars. The technology with batteries isn't quite there yet. However, he sees the situation of peak oil, and GM has gotten into a partnership with an outfit where they are working on making basically biofuels from virtually anything, biomass, landfill waste, old tires, for less than $1 a gallon, and he stated very categorically that ethanol is a short-term stopgap solution as we get to the point of actually getting into electric vehicles, which will have to become the future and the standards if the auto industry wants to survive. So Mitt
Romney, good for him. I got it. I mean, he's way ahead of the eight ball there. Part of the reason may be because the Democratic Congress, which we often slam here on this and show and throughout the horn, did pass a bill. It was an imperfect bill. They had to cut out some of the good stuff, which would include government subsidies for wind and solar. They had to cut it out because Republicans were filibustering. But they did pass an increase in fuel standards, CAFE standards, the first increase in car fuel standards since the 1970s, since Jimmy Carter,
right,
in the United States. And my guess is the GM CEO is a practical man and basically sees the writing on the wall. It's going to be required anyway, so he's getting with the program. So good for him.
Yeah,
but Mitt Romney
is very similar
to
Google and their, you know, solar cheaper than coal thing, because they see it is, you know, crucial for them to come up with a new way to power their industry. And I think GM has woken up to this, and they've watched the outfits like Tesla Motor Cars, and they've watched Phoenix Motors, who are building these really great high-performance plug-in electric vehicles, and seeing, well, you know, if these startups can pull this stuff off with our kind of money and R&D backing, we should be able to do amazing things.
See, that's why Mitt Romney that's why he interests me so much, because Mitt Romney, I really think, is the closest of the Republicans to George W. Bush. In terms, I mean, admittedly, he's gone all over the map with his changes. But where he stands right now is he is the closest to continuation, which is why it's ironic that he, of all of them, refuses to mention George W. Bush and just mentions Reagan and the first George Bush, or George Herbert Walker Bush, because he's exactly the pro-big oil, pro-gas-guzzling, anti-environmental president that W. is. Let me read to you. You asked me his reasoning. I have here an article here from CBS News called Romney Slams CAFE Fuel Requirements. This is from Warren, Michigan. The reporter writes, in front of a backdrop of automobiles in this Motor City suburb, Mitt Romney said that federal regulations intended to improve automobile efficiency have unfairly hurt jobs in Michigan. Quote, I wasn't wild about those because even though we all agree we want to see our fuel economy standards go up, when CAFE was put in place, it helped the foreign manufacturers and hurt the domestics. It hurt our jobs here. So here we have Europe and Japan taking the lead with cars with better fuel efficiency. And what does Romney say? He says we can't have better fuel efficiency because that would help Europe and Japan because they have more fuel-efficient cars. Instead of saying we need to be as good as they are, that's his argument. His argument is, look, we still have the horse and buggy. They have the bullet train. We can't possibly bring the bullet train to America because that would hurt horse and buggy manufacturers. That is exactly,
you know,
what he's saying.
I really think that, you know, GM is waking up to the fact that the reason why the American auto manufacturers have lost their footing from being, you know, the powerhouses that they were is because they're making cars that people don't desire in this current market and in this current climate.
At $100 a barrel,
you know,
oil price.
This is good business practice. And,
right,
you know, to actually look forward and try and come up with a way to keep their businesses afloat as opposed to trying to, you know, I mean, these statements by Romney, I agree with you. I think it's hysterical that, you know, he kind of avoids the George W. Bush thing, but I think they're all avoiding George W. Bush because he's such a black mark on the Republican Party at the moment. So,
but he gets the Orwellian.
It.
But see, Romney does the same Orwellian logic that Bush does. That's the irony. Here he complains to McCain. You can't tell the truth to people in Michigan. McCain said, I'm telling you some straight talk. We're going to get out of some manufacturing jobs and into service jobs. Okay. Well, it is true that as a general matter in the world economy, you know, service jobs, particularly in America, are becoming more important, manufacturing jobs less at a global scale. that's a longer argument, but that's in general what's going on. So McCain says, look, we want to try to get these jobs back, but we'll get some other jobs. So Romney slams McCain and says, what do you mean we won't get these jobs? We're going to preserve all these jobs. How can you say that, you know, that the economy's changing? We're going to preserve every old job. It is Romney that is basically defending the horse and buggy. He's saying, we're going to keep those big, gas-guzzling, huge, you know, SUV cars, and we're going to keep at it because if people have to change, they might lose their jobs. And he won with that.
He won
Michigan.
Just to give you the extreme example of what's been going on at the motor show, I actually saw footage of the head of Humvee showing one of their new greener vehicles, saying
when it gets 6 miles per gallon now instead of 4.
Yeah. You know, they might actually get it up to 12 or something.
Wow.
Even Humvee, a vehicle in which if you buy it in the United States, you get a huge tax break because it falls under the category of an industrial farm vehicle.
Right. That's true.
You know, these folks are even seeing that, you know, we can't go on with this bullheaded, absolutely ignorant business plan when we are seeing the futures market just recently, what was it, last week, are putting bets down that by the end of the year we will be seeing $200 a barrel oil.
$200, wow. That's
futures market's call as of January.
So actually doubling, I guess it's the $6 a gallon? I mean, I've argued for years we need to tax gasoline and use the money to provide for alternative, you know, transportation, because I understand that taxes hurt the poor. We need to provide for transportation, but that we have to tax gasoline because then at least we're getting this excess funds, meaning we, the United States government or state governments, rather than Abu Dhabi and all the other people whose hands Bush has been kissing all week. You know, if someone skimming off the top, at least I'd rather it be my government rather than some foreign government that's just going to give the money to some terrorist group. But Mitt Romney is all about the old ways, and he won Michigan because of it, which tells you that you can still trick people. The interesting thing, though, is how low turnout was. Here you had a Democratic campaign that meant nothing. It meant zero. I mean, Hillary Clinton was on the ballot, but there were no delegates that were awarded. And if you look at it, she got almost as many votes as Romney did. And McCain, who in 2000... Democrats and independents swarmed over, basically because in 2000 the race between Gore and Bradley was over. Al Gore pretty much swamped all the primaries and won pretty handily the Democrat nomination in 2000. So the Democrats had nothing to do, and they went all and they voted for McCain as a way to basically vote against George W. Bush. Well, this year the Democrats could have voted for McCain. They could have switched over. The Democratic race didn't matter, and they didn't. And what I think it shows is that really nobody likes the Republican candidates. I mean, independents aren't voting for them. Independents are largely voting for Barack Obama. Republicans don't like their candidates. Independents don't like their candidates. And certainly Democrats don't like their candidates. And so, like I said, part of me – look, one of them has to win the nomination. Part of me hopes it's a madman like Romney or Huckabee just because, heck, I think they'd be a bit easier to beat than John McCain. Anything else you want to say, John, before I go to break? Maybe he's already left us. Thank you, John, for your call. I always appreciate when you do call our environmentalist. He knows a lot more about this stuff than I do. When we come back, I will give you the promised audio feed from Mike Huckabee as he talks about amending our Constitution to fit God's standards. You won't want to miss that. If you want to call in, 877-4-HEAD-ON. We'll be right back.
This is the Head On Radio Network.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. The Las Vegas debate, sponsored by MSNBC, revealed more about the pathetic state of corporate journalism than it did about the three leading Democratic candidates. First of all, the network owned by GE went to court to deprive Dennis Kucinich of the opportunity to participate in the debate, even though it originally invited him. Then some of the first words out of Brian Wilmes' mouth were, "It's down to three." Well, the only reason there were three on stage, Brian, is because you booted the fourth one off. For the next half hour of the two-hour debate, you wouldn't have known that there was a war going on in Iraq or in Afghanistan, or that this country's falling into recession, or that people are losing their homes en masse. Why? Because all Brian Williams and Tim Russert wanted to talk about was tit-for-tat stuff. Williams's first three questions were on the racial spat between Obama and Clinton. Russert's first five were on the same subject. Then Williams asked Obama about his remark in the previous debate that Hillary was likable enough, as if that has anything to do with anything. Williams followed up by asking Edwards if he wasn't piling on that debate. And then Brian Williams reached the absolute low point when he spread around some filth he'd found on the internet about Obama and asked him to respond to this false information. That just gives new meaning to scraping from the bottom of the barrel. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
If you or someone close to you has a hearing loss, here is some great news. Thousands of Open Caption videos are yours to borrow, and it's all free. Open Caption videos make it possible for the hearing impaired to understand television. The Caption Media Program offers classic Hollywood movies, special interest, and educational videos. Visit us online at cfv.org or call 1-800-237-6213. You can register to be a user and make your selections from our online or printed catalog. It's just that easy, and we'll even pay for the postage. Open Caption videos are perfect for the classroom, your home, or even the workplace. The nonprofit Caption Media Program is funded by the U.S. Department of Education and administered by the National Association of the Deaf. Tell a family member or a friend about the Caption Media Program today. Bookmark cfv.org for free loan Open Caption videos or call 1-800-237-6213.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Back to the Inside Scoop, talking about the presidential campaign. You know, for a true junkie like myself, I do like to watch all the commentary. And here's something that has gotten very, very little press. Part of what I do, obviously, on the Inside Scoop is I try to convey to you stories that the mainstream media is missing. And isn't it interesting that Mike Huckabee wants to create a theocracy? I mean, he was asked that question at the Republican debate in South Carolina. He said, "Oh, no, 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 no. My religious views are my religious views, and, you know, and yours are yours," and so forth. Well, listen to this clip, not at a debate, but at a rally where most of his supporters, of course, are evangelical. Let's play the clip.
I have opponents in this race who do not want to change the Constitution. But I believe it's a lot easier to change the Constitution than it would be to change the Word of the living God. And that's what we need to do, is to amend the Constitution so it's in God's standards, rather than try to change God's standards so it lines up with some contemporary view of how we treat each other and how we treat the family.
Did you catch that? It's easier to amend the Constitution than change the Word of the living God. Not just that God lives, but I guess God's talking to Mike Huckabee and telling him exactly what to do. He's hearing voices, and he's going to run the country accordingly. I mean, why else mention the living God, right? The word of the living God, not the word of, you know, the God in the Bible, which is extreme enough. But the word of the living God, is he our prophet, Mike Huckabee? Is he going to give us the word from on high? What if God tells him to kill all the homosexuals? Which I... I used that word because I think that's how they think of us. Will he do that too? Let's just listen closely. Play that clip again, if you would. Can I get a replay of the clip?
I have opponents in this race who do not want to change the Constitution. But I believe it's a lot easier to change the Constitution than it would be to change the Word of the living God. And that's what we need to do, is to amend the Constitution so it's in God's standards, rather than try to change God's standards so it lines up with some contemporary view of how we treat each other and how we treat the family.
There's nothing more horrible than a contemporary view of how we treat each other and how we treat the family. Did you catch that? Did you catch that? Better to line the Constitution up with God's standards rather than some contemporary view of how we treat the family and how we treat each other. Well, let's see. The biblical standard of treatment of women is not so different from the Taliban standard. I mean, women didn't have the vote anywhere till 100 years ago, less than 100 years ago, actually. And we know Mike Huckabee has said that he believes religiously that women should obey their husbands. So do we amend the Constitution to require that? He doesn't like contemporary views. What would those contemporary views be, Mike? Tolerance? Racial tolerance? Tolerance of gay people? Tolerance of people who are atheists and don't believe in God? Different family structures? Adopting kids? That, you know. What are these contemporary views that you so disagree with? Here we are fighting a battle for the hearts and minds of Muslims around the world, right? I mean, there is a radical element in some quarters of Islam that is quite anti-American for all kinds of reasons. Actually, it's more political probably than religious. But for whatever reason, we are trying to democratize the Middle East, which, for all the fact that George Bush has gone about it in the worst possible way, that shouldn't take away from the fact that the goal is eventually a good one. It would be nice if there were equal rights in countries that now have dictators. It would be nice if women had equal rights. It would be nice if gay people weren't persecuted. But you know what those are? Those are contemporary notions of how we treat the family and each other. Well, Mike Huckabee would amend the Constitution to stop that. And for all the talk at the Nevada debate among the Democrats about race and gender and blah, 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 and we'll get to that. How come the media didn't pick up this quote by Huckabee? They didn't pick it up. They didn't notice it. They spent hours and hours on hours on Hillary Clinton being asked a question about how she stays looking so nice on the hard days, and she said, you know, well, this is not personal, you know, this is personal, it's not just political, and I care, and blah, blah, blah. Okay, fine. But Mike Huckabee, winner of Iowa, third place finisher in New Hampshire and Michigan, how come this quote hasn't been reported anywhere but on the Horn? Did you see it? Did you hear about it? There may be other progressive websites that are putting it up, but the mainstream media is missing it. Huckabee seems like such a nice guy, doesn't he? Such a sweetheart. Someone who cares about the common man. Someone who says to Mitt Romney, you know, I want to be with the person who gets fired rather than with the boss. Some of his economic issues are, you could call them liberal even. He's got some crazy ways to deal with them, like, you know, tax cuts for the rich. But he talks a good game. Sometimes the way he talks, he sounds like John Edwards. And then, when he's secluded with his evangelicals, you hear talk about amending the Constitution to match God's law. Wow. Osama bin Laden couldn't have said it better. 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. When we come back, I'm going to go over the Democratic debate in Las Vegas. and what I found there. And you're welcome to call in and let me know what you think. We'll be right back after this.
This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Great universities never set out simply to reflect the communities in which they exist. Rather, they serve as seedbeds of change in an ever-changing world. They take pride in being places where truth is freely sought, where inquiry is encouraged, where new ideas and new ways can develop and flourish at the expense of the old. When a true academic community, instructors and students together, acts and expresses itself freely, without fear, all of society benefits. Concord University is already using this new set of challenges as opportunities to serve in ways that strengthen its dedication to community, its commitment to service. In graduate education, in professional services to working professionals, in highly respected fields of study where standards remain high, in continuing to place graduates in the very best professional and graduate schools in the nation, Concord University remains the very best higher education bargain in this region. Don't ever allow yourself to accept anything less. Concord University, still since 1872, an education you can put to work. For an appointment, call 1-800-344-6679.
It wasn't exactly planes, trains, and automobiles on Head On with Bob Kincaid.
This is what the Bush Administration Justice Department didn't want you to see back in 2001. They took out and they huffed the marker a little bit, and then they went, oh, cool. And they wiped out the name where it says, the plane was chartered either by the Saudi Arabian royalty family or Osama bin Laden. Somebody's got to call up and say, good afternoon. Thank you for calling Ryan International Flights. How may I help you?
Hello. This is Osama bin Laden, and I would like to rent a Boeing 727. Do you have one handy?
Oh, just a moment. Let me check. It's a Mr. Bin Laden wants to know if we got a 727. Do we, Harry, do we have a 727?
Yeah, we got a 727 just sitting there on the lot. Going cheap. There's nothing here. Nothing to look at. Keep moving. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. The, you know, the 6'7" Arab with the portable dialysis machine and the white robes.
Somebody's trying.
Head On with Bob Kincaid, weeknights, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern, only on the Head On Radio Network.
Howdy, this is Baxter Black. And if you're like me, you're concerned that the environment we enjoy today may not be around for our children and grandchildren. All the new technology in the world can't create more sky over our heads or new oceans. The Earth's natural resources, fresh water, land, and even the air we breathe are limited. Voluntary family planning improves the health of women and their children. It also helps slow population growth, which is good for our planet. So help ensure that people everywhere have access to the information and services they need to plan their families and help build a healthy future for us all. Population Action International is working to promote voluntary family planning around the world. Visit us at www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. Now to the Democratic side. I hope you had a chance to watch the debate in Las Vegas. You know, the first third of the debate, and Matt Rothschild is right there on the Progressive Moment, the press tried and struggled and pushed and shoved and almost forced Obama and Clinton and Edwards to do some kind of racial attack. Well, they weren't biting, to their credit. Obama, Clinton, and Edwards stood up admirably against the media and said, we're not taking part in this. We're not raising the race card. I think Hillary Clinton said it best. She said, you know, you have to look at us as individuals, not based on race or gender. Obama echoed it beautifully. You know where this came up, of course. It all came up because Hillary Clinton had said that, you know, it's important who's president, that the dreams of Martin Luther King were realized in the Civil Rights Act of 1964, signed by Lyndon Johnson, which, of course, is true. Now, there's no doubt that Johnson, and particularly Kennedy, would not have done anything with regard to civil rights if it hadn't been for Martin Luther King, for his leadership, for the March on Washington, for all the marches he did and all the political work he did. He was clearly the impetus, not just him, but the whole civil rights movement. He was the leader, was the impetus for that. But yes, at the end of the day, of course it took a president. It takes both. It takes activists, and it takes people in the White House that fulfill the activist dreams. Well, there were some people in the Obama campaign that took this as an attack on Martin Luther King. There were some in the Clinton campaign that responded harshly. But I have to say, I was very, very proud of both Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton for making clear that, you know, things their surrogates say, as Obama says, they get overzealous. Hillary Clinton said that her supporters went too far. And the media, Russert and Brian Williams pressed hard, trying to get them to trash each other, and both of them stayed above the fray. Good for both of them. I thought it was funny, though. The whole first third of the debate is, as Matt Rothschild pointed out, Russert and Williams are doing their best, trying to get the Democrats to go after each other on race or gender, and the Democrats aren't biting. And they're saying very nice things to each other, which I like, because we all have to come together in November and support the Democratic nominee, whoever he or she is. And, you know, Clinton was saying, we're all family here. John Edwards was asked the question, is it difficult being a white man? He didn't bite. He said, look, Hillary said no race or gender. Obama agreed. I agree, too. But what was interesting is that after the first third, there was actually someone in the audience that shouted out, enough race questions, you two. Stop with the race questions. He was escorted out. You're not allowed to shout out things at the debate. But the media was trying really, really hard to get the two of them to fight, to separate the Democratic Party on the basis of race. And to their credit, they didn't bite. And that's obviously the right thing to do. Look, it may be, at the end of the day, that more African Americans vote for Obama than Clinton, and more women vote for Clinton than Obama. And that may well be true. But neither of them can win a national campaign based on their race or gender. It's noted. It exists. No one can deny it. It shows the power and reach of the Democratic Party. But they should be judged on the basis of their individuality. And I think that's a good thing. One issue that's going to come up in the Nevada caucuses, I do want to address. Because I think it's been... I don't know what I think about it. It has to do with the caucuses in the casinos. Now, let you know what's going on here. The Nevada caucuses are on a Saturday. I guess they think that's when fewer people are working or going to church. I don't know what that does for Orthodox Jewish voters. I guess they can't participate. But it's on a Saturday and for 2 hours. And, of course, the nature of a caucus rather than a primary is that instead of everyone having all day to get up and vote whenever they can, they've all got to get together for this sustained two-hour period to, you know, convince each other to vote for whichever candidate they want under the caucus rules. Well, in Iowa, I guess if you had to work that evening, you were out of luck. But, you know, on a Tuesday night in Iowa, there aren't that many people that can't get away from work for 2 hours. I'm sure there's some. I mean, doctors or really anyone else that's got a night job, heck, even a convenience clerk worker. I mean, what do they have to do? Put all their non-citizens on staff for the 2 hours at the 7-Eleven because the citizen wants to go to the caucus? I don't know what they do. I was thinking about the fact that states should let people participate in these caucuses, but someone's got to run something that's open, the hospital is open at that hour, right? It's one of the reasons why I'm much not sure how I feel about caucuses, I guess. It's a hard thing. I think the right thing to do, by the way, is to say that if you're going to vote in a caucus and you can't attend, you should be able to vote absentee just like you can on primary day. You should be able to write down your first choice and your second choice and your third choice, because the way caucuses work, if you don't get a certain percentage of the vote, then everyone has to re-caucus and go to someone else. But if you have a reason why you can't be there that day, you should be able to vote absentee. That's what I would like to see the people in Nevada do. In Nevada, on Saturday at noon, unlike a Tuesday night in Iowa, a lot of people are working. This is Las Vegas, after all, is 70 or 80% of the entire population of the state is in metropolitan Las Vegas. And a lot of people are working in casinos, is, you know, everything from bartenders to blackjack dealers to hotel managers. You know, that's what Las Vegas is all about. So the idea was said, why don't we let people vote in their casinos? And that makes sense to a point. The problem is that that gives those who work in casinos, in particular casinos, an advantage that those working in other places don't have. So there's going to be this lawsuit, and the judge will come down tomorrow. Some in the Clinton campaign were worried that because the Culinary Workers Union had endorsed Obama, that therefore this procedure to let people vote in their place of work at specifically these casinos would favor Obama. And I got to tell you, I do have a problem with it, sort of. I mean, after all, you're going in a caucus. You're going with your employer standing there right there. Your employer has endorsed a candidate, right? Your employer works for this union, and your pit boss, say, has endorsed a candidate, and you're supposed to openly, in a caucus, at your place of business, with all your employers and coworkers there, stand up and say, hey, I want to vote for somebody else. I don't know that I like that. I mean, it's one thing to caucus with your friends and neighbors, but quite different to caucus at your place of business. It's sort of the difference in sexual harassment. It's one thing to date your friends and neighbors, and quite another thing to date your boss or someone working for you. We call that sexual harassment in some instances. It's kind of touchy. So I don't blame the people who are suing. I do think the answer is not to shut down the casinos, per se. I think the answer is to have an absentee procedure. You should, if you're working that day and you can prove you're working that day, you should be able to vote absentee. That way you don't have to vote under the noses of your bosses. That way certain workers in certain industries aren't favored. I do think, though, it's been unfair of some to criticize the Clinton campaign as saying, well, you're just trying to keep people from voting. It's a problem, I think, with the very way caucuses are done. And, you know, part of me really likes the idea of a caucus. I mean, you know, someone like me with a strong opinion, I like to think I could go to a caucus and win people over to my side. Of course, today I'm undecided, so I don't know which side I'm on. But in general, I think I would like that. But at a place of business, I just think the answer is absentee voting. Again, there are people for religious reasons that can't vote on Saturday. We need to make it easier for people, for everyone, to vote. And whether it's done by absentee or mail-in ballots, you know, or however it's done, something does make me a bit queasy about this. Though, I guess it's better than nothing. But I don't know. At the end of the day, I guess I prefer a primary over a caucus. I did watch the debate, though, and I was struck, I guess, by how much they are the same. I kept looking for differences among them to try to distinguish between them. There were a couple things I noted. On the bankruptcy bill, John Edwards, to my shock and chagrin, had voted for both, supported both of the bad bankruptcy bills. Hillary had supported an earlier one but didn't support the one that became law. Barack Obama was good on both of the bankruptcy bills, but he was bad on the energy bill. Barack Obama had supported the Dick Cheney energy bill that gave $85 billion in corporate welfare to oil companies. Now, he explained it as that it gave for alternative energy sources, too, which it did. But I think Hillary Clinton was right on that. But basically, it's getting hard to tell the difference among them in matters of policy. I have to say, in matters of policy, the differences are so fine that I think Clinton and Edwards and Obama are pretty much the same. And I'm an issues guy. I like to decide on the basis of issues rather than personality and everything. But given that they're all so close to identical, I may have to come down to those kinds of non-issue-oriented things that I so decry and eventually come down and at least give you an idea of who I'm voting for. I'm coming close now. I still haven't decided yet. But if you want to try to convince me, call in tomorrow. We'll talk about it. Try to talk me out of it. For now, this is Mark Levine signing off.